Welcome back, baseball fans, to part two of episode 57 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I am still your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the baron of all baseball podcasts. Before we get to our guest, I would like to just briefly thank you all for downloading part two and listening today, and I really hope and encourage you to listen to part one as well, as Nick Flaris and I really did a great job of covering some of the top prospects have at least projected to be available in next June's draft. So if you have any interest in college baseball or the MLB draft, make sure you check that out. And now, in an exclusive and a first time for the Nats GM Show, I am joined by two special guests. First and foremost, I've got Nick J. Flaris from 2080 Baseball. You may have heard him in part one of this episode at 57, but if not, welcome to the show, Nick. And I am also joined this week by friend of the show and great friend of mine, excellent evaluator, C.J. Whitman Jr. from 2080 Baseball as well. So welcome, guys.
How's it going?
It's great to have you guys back. Two of my favorite guys in baseball, and I'm really excited to have you guys on the show and try to break down the Orioles and the Nats systems pretty quickly as we can. Pitchers and catchers reported, I guess, sometime in the last couple days, depending when everybody's listening to this. And I thought this would be a good time to try to get you guys both on and break down these systems.
Sounds good, Ryan. I really appreciate you having me on. And, you know, it's always my pleasure to come on your show and talk with you.
Well, we'll definitely back at you. So I'd like to start in Baltimore if I can. I don't know really how to start talking about the Orioles system. It's a little emptier than perhaps we'd all like at this point, and there's some question marks around it. I don't know if Whit you want to start or Nick, either guy.
Well,
but
I'm gonna pass the mic over to Whit since he's really knows the Orioles and Nats system as well as anyone I've spoken to this year. But the one thing I will say, Whit and I spent some time on the phone today working on our 2080 rankings, the larger rankings, and kind of a funny anecdote. One of the names that came up, and I brought him up sort of expecting to get slapped down a little bit by Whit, since I know he is a such an expert on the O system in particular, but I said, you know, I think there's a pretty strong case for Michael Givens being the best prospect eligible player in the system, and you know, maybe even a top 100 type guy, and braced myself for impact, and Whit came back and said, I'm right there with you, and I won't put any more words in his mouth and maybe let him start off talking about Givens, but we both, I think, were surprised to find that each of us were higher on Givens than maybe we expected people generally to be. So maybe, Whit, that's a good spot to start.
Yeah, most definitely, and I had told Nick when we had discussed that, I said, when he mentioned Michael Givens, I was hoping that he didn't say, oh, I think he's one of the more, you know, overrated reliever prospects in the minors. And I was thinking, like, oh, man, how am I going to approach this? Because I love Givens. But no, he was like, yeah, I think Givens is honestly one of the more underrated prospects in the minors. And I was like, I completely agree. I mean, I saw Givens a couple times last year, and it was 100 from a low slot. He sat 97, 99 comfortably. It's a heavy sinking fastball. And then he has a slider that works. I mean, I think it's going to play solid average. And Nick and I were talking. We really think that he could be, you know, a win and a half to a two-win reliever at the big league level. And when he came up last year, I thought that he showed that. So we were talking about could you make the case for him to be the top prospect in the system, and I think you can make a case. I mean, Ryan and I talked before, we loved Hunter Harvey, and but the missed developmental year is really going to hurt him, I think, and the injury is kind of a weird one to come back from. I think he's going to have a little bit of trouble planting and stuff like that, so it's going to affect the delivery, and I liked his stuff, but I didn't love the arm action, and the command had a little bit of ways to go. So I mean, when you're discussing those two, and you really want to focus on proximity to the majors and value maybe next year and the year after, I think you can definitely take Givens in that case. Long-term value, obviously I'm going to take Harvey, but those two guys for me are the top two prospects in the system. And then you come down to a weaker system, like you had said, Ryan. I mean, I think you can make a case for a lot of guys at number three. I know you guys probably have Chance Sisko, because if you can convince me that he's he's a hitting catcher, then sure, I would agree with you there. I mean, I've argued with Ryan plenty of times that Cisco can't catch, so I mean, but it's just a wide open system. I like the guy Jomar Reyes a lot. I mean, I think you can make the case he's their best bat in their system by a long shot. But for him, it comes down to defensive value and where's he going to play and is he done growing yet? I mean, he's 18 years old and he's 6'6", 250 pounds. He hit 280 and didn't K out and didn't punch out much. But I mean, how's that body going to project going forward? And where's he going to play defensively? And then if he has to move to first, is there a lot more pressure on the bat? Then you got a couple of guys in the higher minors like Mike Wright and Christian Walker. I like David Hess a little bit. It's just a weak system, like Ryan had said, and I'm not really sure where they go from here.
Go ahead, Nick. I'm sorry.
Just to tag that really quickly, I agree with everything Witt's saying there. I also am skeptical of Cisco sticking and having value at catcher long term. I like Reyes. In addition to the body issues or the body concerns, it's also a proximity concern, right? I mean, there's still a few years to go, and as tends to happen, things come up in life and development and everything, and it's not just a matter of can you point to something very specific right now that you think is going to be a hurdle. There are unknown unknowns, I guess, to channel Rumsfeld, Donald Rumsfeld, stuff that could pop up out there that just no one's aware of. And the further away you are from the majors, the more of an opportunity there is for something like that to pop up. The one name that I'll add, and Whit, I think you cut out a little bit, so maybe you said him and I missed it, but I think one interesting name is a guy that came over from the Astros, Chris Lee. He saw a good jump in his stuff last year, showed well into the fall. And it's the type of arm where there's still work to be done, and you need to see the higher level production for a longer period of time before you're comfortable that that's the new normal. But I think that's another name that if you were to sit down with folks across the industry in front offices and look at acquire lists and target lists, he's a name that's probably higher on those lists than he is on public rankings put out by the media right now.
Yeah, I put Reyes as my number one prospect in their system, and I think I'm just planting my flag with him as much as anything, but I believe in the bat, I believe in the power. Like you guys said, that he's going to be a first baseman, maybe even a DH at some point, but that bat is going to haunt. I mean, that dog can haunt.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you there. I mean, he raked when I saw him every time. But going back to that Chris Lee name, that's a really good name, too. I would have liked to have mentioned him when I was talking, because I have a little bit of background with him. I think he's going to be in Double-A again, but it's low to mid-90s fastball. Really good changeup, I think, that could work, possibly play average. And he's got a really good slider, too. So if we're looking at a guy that's got a plus fastball from the left side and two average pitches, I mean, that's a really quality starter. That's a good starter. So, I mean, if he ends up in the bullpen too, I still think that the stuff really plays. He's definitely a big leaguer for me. I could see him being on pretty high on a acquire list.
And what do you guys think about their top couple of picks in last June's draft, DJ Stewart and Mountcastle?
Oh, boy. You want me to go into DJ Stewart? I don't know if you want me to do this on your show. I'm not a DJ Stewart fan at all. Obviously, I didn't like the stance, and when he was told to change it, he didn't change it. So I don't like the body as it is. I don't think he can play the outfield, so it's probably going to be a first baseman. And then he went to Aberdeen and punched out a bunch and hit like 220. So there's some stuff that's really got to be worked on there, and that's a college guy that should be more advanced than high school kids, but I really didn't like DJ Stewart.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with Witt's general take, and I guess I'll just tag it with a little bit more draft-centric information. I think, Stewart was sold to the public as a performance college guy that was, advanced and put up these gaudy numbers. But the couple things that I think to keep in mind, and it's I guess the easiest way to put it to listeners who don't follow college baseball is, for a left-handed bat, playing a majority of your games, which in college baseball it ends up being a majority, it's not a 50-50 split, at home at FSU is similar to being able to hit a Coors Field. It's a really short right field with a really tall wall, lots of opportunities for home runs and extra bases off the wall, and especially given the BB Corps bats. You know, they're not loved by the players, but still you can get more carry than you can off of a mishit bat with mishit ball with wood. I firmly believe, and I think the numbers back it up. I'd have to go back and look at my own college splits. I don't have them in front of me right now, but that inflates the numbers a little bit. And in general, being a early round draft eligible player, hitting in any college lineup, it's college baseball is approached in a much more strategic fashion than Major League Baseball is. So it's much more common to see players literally pitched around. You know, in the major leagues, you may try and avoid certain players in certain situations, but in college, it could come down to like, hey, this is the guy that we know can beat us, and we're going to just take our chances with other people in the lineup. So the walk rate was inflated a little bit. The power numbers were inflated. And then everything else that Witt said from a scouting perspective I thought was spot on. I think the glove is, you know, maybe at full development with improvements, it doesn't kill you, and he's able to stick out in left field. But that, you know, the best outcome is sort of a passable left fielder. And when you're talking about a first round pick spent on that to go with a bat that has significant questions, it's just not the direction that I probably would have taken.
And can you guys touch on Mountcastle a little bit? Because I liked him a little bit from what I saw in some of the showcases and stuff on TV last summer.
Sure. So the big question with Mountcastle, he's a, you know, reasonably athletic kid. He's going to continue to get bigger. He was a shortstop in high school. He's not going to be a shortstop long term. And if you look at the way he moves on the dirt, the majority opinion is I would assume that he's going to shift out to an outfield corner at a certain point. And he doesn't really throw well enough to be a right fielder. So again, you're looking at a likely outcome of a left fielder, which already is putting a lot of increased pressure on the bat developing. There's good raw power. If you watch them take BP, especially if you watch them take BP in high school with a metal bat, it was it's impressive. He's got good raw power. The plate coverage isn't great. He didn't handle across the scouting circuit, you know, the showcase and travel ball circuit. Didn't really handle the premium velocity and the quality spin as well as the other top bats in the class did. And, you know, those are the types of sort of red flags that tend to drop down the draft day value of a high school bat. The hit tool is pretty difficult to try and project out as it is. And when you start to build in, you know, a lower defensive floor to go with, you know, red flags that are already popping up, it's harder to find teams that are willing to invest that seven-figure amount that is generally required to get someone on day one. And I know the Orioles got him at a slight discount, if I'm remembering correctly, but still, it was a little bit aggressive, and I'm not convinced he wouldn't have been there had they waited around. But, you know, again, that's sort of to borrow your term that you just used, Ryan, it's a plant your flag moment for the area guy, for the cross checker, and for the scouting department. They say, hey, we're kind of going out on a limb compared to maybe what other folks are seeing, but we're not afraid to do that. And when organizations do that and it works out, everyone, you know, is very quick to say, hey, look how well this organization scouts the draft, and the Cardinals are usually the example that's held up for something like that.
Next question I have for you guys, and it's just kind of a short one. Are we giving up on Dylan Bundy?
I'm not. I mean, I saw him last year in that short stint when he was healthy before the shoulder flared up again. I liked the stuff. I mean, it's definitely not what he was. Worked like 90, 93. The cutter more or less turned into a slider, which is fine. I had a solid grade on that too. The changeup was still a little bit firm, and where the fastball is now, I don't think it's going to play that well, not as well as it did at least.
The curveball lacks the true bite. Still has the depth, but it's not as hard as velocity anymore. I mean, the stuff just looked a little bit depressed. You know, going back to Bundy a couple of years ago, I think the concerns were that he was a 5'11 maxed out guy with really advanced command and stuff as a 19-year-old. Well, that's why he made it to the big leagues. That's why he was in the pen, you know, during that stretch run there. So when he came back to the full workload, we had only seen it for, you know, three inning stints. I think the durability concern should have been there the whole time. So when you see him have Tommy John and then he has and he struggles with his recovery and he ends up having a shoulder issue, I mean, I don't think that the injuries should have been that much of a shock to people that he had missed all of 14 and was an injury plagued 15. So I'm not going to give up completely, but I do want to see him handle the workload with that body type, with the kind of stuff that he has, the effort that he has in the delivery. You know, I don't think that he'll ever be a top of the rotation arm again, but I won't say that he's a surefire reliever for the rest of his career.
All right. Last question for you guys on the Orioles system is
okay, go ahead. Just to get on the record, I'm not giving up on Bundy being a major league arm, but I don't see a clear path for him to become a starter. I think, as Whit mentioned, the missed time is a pretty big issue, and he doesn't have that safety net of you know, building up his innings through the minor. So, you know, the Orioles don't have the luxury of saying, well, we're going to try and, you know, ramp him up to 80 innings this year and then 140 next year. And I don't see it happening. And I'm fine with that. But I'm off the Bundy as a starter bandwagon, and have been for a little bit. And I think if you get a quality, and this is going to be probably come off as pessimistic, but I think if you get a quality middle reliever, then you've made out as much as you could hope at this point for Bundy. I mean, it's possible he develops into sort of a force in relief, but I don't know. It's the depressed stuff, as Whit put it, is going to matter, and I don't see a clear path for him to sort of turn into that impact player the Orioles were hoping they were getting in 2011.
Well, that's definitely disappointing and depressing to hear. So,
he's out of options, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's out of options.
Yeah, he's stuck.
I forgot that.
So,
interesting. I'd forgotten that. Yeah, I agree with Nick's point. Then they don't have that luxury of going to send him down for 80 innings. Yeah, that's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, they're in a quagmire.
If you don't want this to be a pest, it's kind of like a choose your own adventure podcast. You can decide if you want it to be upbeat or pessimistic. You can just delete everything that we've said in the last 2 minutes and just stay with Witt's original answer if you want to make the O's fans a little happier, or we can be a little bit more pessimistic.
Well, final question I have on the Orioles, and I hate the term sleeper, but is there anybody that we haven't mentioned that in their system that you guys kind of like a little bit more than maybe the consensus?
Let's see if I can go back. I think a guy that doesn't get talked about enough is Jonah Heim. I'm pretty sure I mentioned him during the year you and I talked. I really like him behind the plate. I think Buck Showalter had given him some good words. You said you were going to mention him?
Yes, I was like, oh, I got this one.
Yeah, I liked Heim a lot. I really liked him behind the plate, and I thought the bat projected really well. I mean, he swings it pretty well from both sides. I think we're going to see more power projection from him, too. I really like the contact skills, the plant at the plate. I mean, he struggles a little bit with spin still, but he's a younger guy in the low minors. I mean, I really like him to develop. I think he's definitely a big league catcher.
Yeah. damn it. I don't have anything to add. That was who I was going with. I agree with what Whit said. I think, you know, I don't know if the bat is – it's probably a down-the-order bat, you know, a number seven, number eight hitter in the future. But I really like the package behind the plate, and think, you know, given where we draw that offensive cutoff point for major league catchers, that this is a major league catcher without question, provided he's healthy. and can stay on the field and continue developing. And yeah, I think that that's probably undervalued by the average prospecting fan, because it's tough to quantify, right? You can't, if you're not out there watching him play, you can't really look at a box score and see how well he's doing behind the plate.
Yeah, he's very quiet. I like his receiving skills.
No, definitely.
So, all right, guys, let's head down 95, so to speak, and let's talk a little bit better system and the Washington Nationals. Maybe I'll just give you guys the floor. I think people have heard enough of me talk about the Nats and their prospects. So, Whit or Nick, kind of your thoughts on the state of the system, kind of first and foremost.
Well, I think it's a solid system, like you had said. When Nick and I are going over our internal rankings, our overall grouping thing, I think we're going to end up having probably five, six, seven guys possibly in our rankings from the national system. You know, just starting at the top, they got a guy that's a really good candidate for the number one prospect in baseball, Lucas Giolito. I mean, I've seen him. We've talked about him. Everybody knows it's crazy stuff. It's a big body. The delivery is a little bit violent. There's a little bit of injury history there, but the command's there. The control's there. He's got three above average pitches, two being borderline elite. I mean, I love Giolito. I think he's going to be a top of the rotation arm for many years in this league. They got a couple of middle infielders that I like. Trey Turner, you know, Nick and I were talking about him before the draft, and we both had agreed that we weren't crazy about him, but we understand the profile where he can play shortstop, the runs, you know, borderline elite. He's going to hit enough to where he provides value there, so that makes him a really good prospect. I think he's a borderline top five, top six shortstop prospect, probably in top five. Another arm for them that I really like that you and I talked about before, Ryan, was Renaldo Lopez. I mean, Renaldo's got electric stuff. It's a huge fastball. It's a really good curveball. The changeup's developing. You know, for him, it's just kind of like the Bundy thing, the durability concerns with him because it's a whippier arm action. It's a really fast arm, but he has trouble repeating his delivery at times. You know, I saw the really good Renaldo, and I saw the really bad Renaldo.
Mm-hmm.
And what the difference was for me was that when he gets out of his mechanics right now, he fails to make adjustments throughout a game. So if it's really off, it's really off. But if it's really on and he's in sync and he's in tune, he could be as good as almost any starter in the league, in the minor leagues, that is. So for him, I think honing that as he grows throughout the low minors and gets into the upper minors, I think it's going to be really key for him. But if he gets that, the developmental package for him, you know, the stuff, the way that the stuff plays and the way that the command can work on really good nights is, you know, that's a number two, number three starter for me. And the floor for him would be a late innings reliever just because the stuff is so electric. And I think he could really give, you know, right-on-right matchups some trouble. And the changeup, if it develops, I think it would work enough to use against lefties, too, at the pen. So, you know, a reliever with three pitches is really good. You know, a starter with three good ones in command is a lot better. So, you know, the next one is Fetty. You know, I liked him. I can't wait to see him this year. Coming off the injury and not pitching that much in pro ball, I think for him, it's really just going to be me seeing him because I know the stuff is there and I knew pre-draft it was there. So, you know, mid-rotation type of starter guy, maybe back end if it's a little bit depressed. And there's one name in the Nats system that I really can see shooting up a lot of boards this year. Mostly in this offseason, he shot up a lot of boards. But Victor Robles, I mean, that's a serious package there. That's a all-star center fielder type guy that we're looking at here. You know, the hit tools there, the arm there, the defense set. I think that Bauer's going to develop a little bit. In him, he's providing center field value no matter what. I really liked him out there. And just the fact that he was a younger guy in the low minors, like Nick had said with Jomar, there are some things that can come up. And, you know, there's a lot of unknowns, I guess, you could say, next week. For me, with him, I think we're going to see him be the top hitting prospect for them, you know, this year.
Yeah, I probably get asked about Robles more than any other prospect in the system. Maybe anybody else in baseball, frankly.
So, yeah, I can see that. I have a tool on him. I think the power's got he's probably going to play below average, but I wouldn't think you were crazy if you told me that he put on a lot of muscle. Speed is, strong forearms really. You like the barrel through the zone. He can really square pitches up, and he can square velocity. And at years old, in a way, squaring velocity for me is a thing. So I really like him going forward.
Now, maybe I'm crazy, but another name I want to talk about is Wilmer Defoe. I put a Tony Phillips comp on him the other day, and I'm sure that's really rich considering how good Tony Phillips was, but I think that's the kind of player he's going to develop into.
You know I loved him. I know you set me up for this.
Of course.
You know I loved him when I saw him. Yeah, I mean, I liked him. You know, he was 23 in high A at the time that I saw him, and I caught a little bit of flack for saying he's going to be in the big leagues next year. I thought he could really hit. I mean, it's borderline elite run. He could play shortstop. I mean, I did not hate him there at all. I thought the glove was average there. You know, if you move him over to second, it's a plus glove. He's got the arm for shortstop, though. I mean, it's a left side of the infield type arm. Not much power, but it's a lot of doubles power. You know, the run's going to allow some borderline double singles to turn into definite doubles. But he's got over the fence pop too in BP. I mean, he's the type of guy for me that if he gets a full season, he can really hit like I think that he can hit. I think he's a 270, 35 doubles. You know, 8 to 10 triples, 8 to 10. Or, you know, 8 home run type guy. And at shortstop, that's almost an all-star type player. But at second base, I mean, that's a really good player too. So I liked Defoe a lot.
Yeah, he's thick too. I don't think people realize how muscular he is for being kind of a smaller middle or infield guy. But I wouldn't want to wrestle him. He would throw you around like a rag doll.
I know he'd throw me around, so he'd definitely throw you around.
No doubt.
Yeah, he's good. I mean, I liked him physically, and it's not like, you know, he's got a beer gut or anything. It's not like it's a bad body projection going forward. You know, he's pretty solid top to bottom, so I don't think, you know, durability is going to be an issue with him. But, yeah, I mean, I loved his overall game, what he could bring to the table, and I think we're going to see him in the big leagues next year.
And I'd love to ask you guys both kind of about the catching prospects in the system, both kind of Jackson Reitz, Severino, maybe Keyboom as well. Just what your guys' thoughts are on those guys.
I liked Keyboom a little bit. I'll defer on Reitz and Nick. Reitz to Nick because I've seen him more recent than I have maybe on the high school circuit. But for Keyboom, I didn't think he was big league starter catcher, but I liked the some skills behind the plate. I thought he needed some work on receiving. His agility wasn't all that great. Some blocking stuff, you know. For me, Keyboom was, I want to say, I'm trying to remember my report off the top of my head. I think I said, you know, 4 potential hit tool with 30 or 40 power. I mean, you know, I think you can squeeze it. If you really squint, you can squeeze a second division starter out of him, but I'm not in love with Keyboom. For Severino, it's, you know, I don't think he can hit. I mean, he's really good behind the plate, plus glove, plus arm. I think you can argue the arm's even higher than that. It's premium arm strength. Accuracy hinders a little bit. The footwork is good, and he throws from the ear. But for me, I just didn't see it with Severino. The bat speed's not really there. I didn't like the way that he recognized pitches, his plan and approach at the plate. Wasn't all that great, and he's a double-A guy. So, I mean, how much more development is he going to have in double-A if he repeats and triple-A? So I don't see big league starter for him either, but defensive replacement, second-type catcher could be his ceiling there.
Yeah, it's odd. Severino's swing doesn't look bad. It just doesn't produce. It's
No, it looks great. I mean, you know, when he's taking his pre-swing warm-ups, I'm like, shit, this guy's going to hit a bomb here. And then he's like, doesn't have a clue what he's doing in the box.
It's the emptiest .230 batting average you'll ever see.
Oh, I would agree to that.
Nick, any thoughts on Reitz? I haven't seen Reitz myself since, you know, high school video type stuff.
Yeah, Reitz is a potential impact bat. You know, there's a lot to work with behind the plate. He could certainly develop into a viable catcher long term, but he's a really good athlete. in my opinion, could easily shift out to an outfield corner and likely right field if he had to. The developmental arc is a little bit longer for Reitz. There's a little bit more developmental work to be done with respect to the foundation. So, you know, making sure that he's got a good feel for his swing and good feel for the barrel and contact, continuing to work on tracking and just, you know, putting together all the basics of going up and taking quality cuts and learning how to work the count and find your pitches and drive them, all that stuff. But he's got a good overall feel for the game. I tend to be bullish that he'll be able to figure it out. And if he's able to figure out on both sides of the plate there, behind the plate and hitting as well, it's a really fun profile. If he shifts out to right field, it's not as sexy, but still capable of being a major league producer. So I know his short season debut wasn't the most inspiring from a production standpoint if you look at the stats, but it's a name you should certainly keep in your mental Rolodex and continue to check in on him and go out to the fields and see him if you have the opportunity. It's someone who could be popping up on Nat's rankings sooner than later. And I loved him as an amateur. I thought the Nats did well to grab him where they did. I think they got him in the third round, maybe?
Third round, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Nick, I know you're kind of up against a little bit of a time thing here, so I'd like to, if I could just maybe move forward and just ask you, are there any other names in the system that you think deserve a mention or that you would like to touch on real quickly?
I mean, I'm a Rhett Wiseman fan. I think that you and I have talked about him in the past. He's not, you know, this isn't the future all-star, but I think he's got a chance to be a future major league contributor. I enjoyed him as a high school player. I thought the progress he made at Vandy was impressive. You know, I got to see him both in Nashville and then out on the Cape a couple times. So I've been seeing him fairly consistently over the last 4 years or so. And I just like the trajectory of his development, where it's going. He's it's a non-traditional profile when you watch him hit. You know, it was fun at watching him at UCLA last spring to see him take the approach of, you know what, I'm just going to let loose and really try and let my power play, and it's going to mean I'm going to strike out a little more, but when I hit the ball, I'm going to hit the shit out of it. I'm sorry, I don't remember if this is a family podcast or not. I like that. I thought that it was good to see him sort of let his hair down and go out and get it. So if he continues on the line he's headed right now, I think it's a major league profile in some capacity, and that's always useful.
And one more name, I don't want to keep you too long, but Blake Perkins. I think you've seen him a couple times. I know I haven't. Just any thoughts on him?
I actually have not seen Perkins. I'm not. I don't have as much familiarity with Perkins. Witt, have you? You have any history with him?
I have not. I do not have any history with him, but I will this year.
Yeah. So have Witt or myself on once the season's going, and we'll dive in on Perkins.
Very, very cool. Witt, let me throw the question back to you. Are there any guys in the system you like or that you would like to talk about a little bit?
I would say that I like what they did in the second round this year, getting Andrew Stevenson.
That's a good name. That's a good name,
yeah, Witt. Yeah, center field profile. I think the hit projects to possibly could be average. Really good glove in center field, you know, above average fielder for me. You know, the runs borderline elite again. You know, average arm. He makes all the throws, the routine play. It's not. It won't be anything where, you know, a guy could run on him from second to home consistently. You know, I don't think that it'll necessarily be a strength, but I don't think it's a weakness by any means. So if you're looking at the overall profile here, it's a plus glove in center with a good arm. You know, possibly an average hit tool with some low power numbers, but an elite run. You know, that's a really good major league regular in center field. You know, I would take that guy on my team every day.
Yeah, just to tag that really quickly. I know this is Witt's answer, but yeah, complete slash and dash profile, good feel for the barrel. I agree with everything Witt said. That's a really good name for folks to follow. And I thought he was, you know, potentially a sandwich round guy, so there was a slight value get for them there in the second round.
Yeah, I thought that was a great pick. One of the many, frankly, in last June's draft. Let's see. Is there anybody else that we need to talk about in the system right now? Austin Voth, any thoughts?
I liked Nick Pavetta more than Voth when I saw them both. But Voth's an all right guy, back-end type guy, you know, can sink it, can cut it a little bit, get you some ground balls. Voth's okay. Definitely a major league contributor for me. We can talk about your boy Drew Ward if you want.
Oh, one of my favorites. One of my favorites, yeah.
Nick, there was a podcast last year that I did with Ryan, and I think Ryan said, oh, I had Ward, like, average run. I think my best time on Ward was, like, 4.6, I want to say. And I was like, yeah. What? You had average run? He was like, yeah, you know, when he gets, like, started from first to third. I was like, oh, okay, I can maybe see it then. But I was like, my man's got a very elongated swing, and he does not get out of the box too quick.
No, yeah, he's I don't know. I'm going back to high school viewings, and he's if I'm remembering correctly, he was old for his class and jumped ahead of class and was still a little bit on the old side. He's always been a little lead footed for me, so I tend to lean towards Witt's take on that one.
Big power big raw power, can hit. Can't play third base, probably a right fielder, and he's a clogger. Doesn't usually work.
He can throw the ball pretty well, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, that covers it pretty well. Yeah, that's him in a nutshell. Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, I remember at the area code games watching him take BP and then take infield, and I saw the draft class year, and I think it was like 2 years ahead of time or something like that. Maybe he was there as a sophomore. And I thought, holy shit, look at this kid, look at his size, he's only a sophomore in high school, like this guy's gonna be a monster. And then when I was going through the scout book, you know, the materials that they give you later on the evening at the hotel, I was like, oh well, he's older than the people that are high school seniors or rising seniors. that's a lot less exciting now.
That very sobering moment, all of a sudden you realize the guy's old. You're like, oh.
Yeah, it's like, how are people not talking about him? This is like the next Bryce Harper. This guy's a monster. He's a sophomore in high school. Oh, he's older than all the seniors. Never mind.
So what you're telling me is the Nats area guy didn't get that booklet is what I'm hearing.
No, I think they got him a little bit later in the draft, too.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe it all works out. And when it does, that's when you get the genius label. All it has to do is work out once and you get a big promotion and employed for the rest of your life.
That is true. So hopefully Drew Ward is my ticket to some kind of a job. So great. I'm glad I'm tying my future to him and his wagon.
That is the best advice I can give you if you're looking for a job in the industry is walk around telling everyone that you love Drew Ward. You'll have him banging down your doors.
I can say I'm not going to take you up on that one.
All right, I guess he's my guy now. Great, all right. So, well, guys, I could pick your brains about the Nats and the Orioles system and prospects all day, but I think we need to cut it off here just for everybody's time. So I'd love to give you guys both a spot for your plugs, where they can find you on Twitter, where they can find your all's work, 2080, and everything else.
So, yeah, and I think I plugged once when we talked about some of the draft kids, so I'll keep it short, but it's Nick J. Falleris, F-A-L-E-R-I-S, on Twitter. And don't send me Facebook friend invites because all you'll get is pictures of my kids, nothing relating to baseball, so you don't want that anyway. And I'll let Witt go ahead and pimp the rest of his stuff there. Yeah, 2080baseball.com.
Yeah, most definitely. Take note on what Nick said about 2080 baseball. I think we have a lot of good stuff and we have a really good team in place coming this year. So 2080 baseball, and you can follow me on Twitter at CJWITTJR, CJ Witt Jr. And add me on LinkedIn because that's my best social media network right now.
LinkedIn is your go-to. All right.
I'm trying to be more professional, man. I had to shut down the Facebook for a little bit and my Instagram hasn't had a post in about 19 weeks of my ex-girlfriend, so hit me up on LinkedIn.
Okay, very, very, very cool.
Is that the first LinkedIn plug that you've gotten on your podcast,
1,000%.
Yeah, 1,000%. That's how I did it, because I knew nobody else has ever done it, and I'm going to start plugging my LinkedIn.
Yeah, like, hey, with Drew Ward, he's in with LinkedIn, apparently, so.
That's what it says on my info thing. Drew Ward hater.
All right, guys. Well, I really cannot thank you enough for joining me today. Huge fan of both of your work. Just a fan of you guys in general as well. Both great guys. So I want to thank you. And I look forward to seeing you guys at the park here in the next, hopefully in the next few weeks.
Yeah, most definitely. I really appreciate it, Ryan. It's always a pleasure to come on your show. And I'm sure we'll be talking plenty of times this year.
Definitely.
Thanks a lot, Ryan. Appreciate it. And next time I'm swinging out to the East Coast, I'll certainly grab some Eastern League baseball or Carolina League baseball with the two of you.
Definitely. Dinner's on me, and you always got a place to stay. So please, guys.
Most definitely. Right, thank you very much.
And that was episode 57, part two, with Nick J. Phalaris and C.J. Whitman Jr., both from 2080 Baseball. Really, two of my favorite guys in the game, and I think two of the best evaluators, certainly, that I know. And C.J. Whitman certainly knows that Orioles in the national systems as well as anybody I know. So I really want to thank those guys for coming on and sharing some time and sharing their knowledge. I'm sure they'll be back on again sometime in the future. A couple of business things before we get out of here for the week. If you could rate and review this podcast on iTunes, hopefully favorably at that, that would really be great, as that helps us gain a larger audience and also looks good for potential advertisers as well. Mentioning advertisers, we are seeking an additional sponsor or sponsors for the podcast. So if you're interested in sponsoring the show, please go to natsgm.com for further details. With that, episode 57 is a wrap. We will see you soon. Bye for now.